But what's interesting about it, it has fundamentally moved the dial on Canadian agriculture. And what I mean by that, from the consumer's perspective, and we do work with the Canadian Center for Food Integrity, they measure consumer trust and a whole variety of different metrics. But one of the metrics is, do you feel the food system here in Canada is going in the right direction? And for the first time since COVID, it's gone substantially up. And by substantially up, I mean, I think it's 58% of consumers now in Canada feel that our food system is moving in the right direction, because we're talking about it more, and we're talking about purchasing Canadian products and talking about some of the, you know, processes we go through as Canadian farmers and ranchers up here with our products.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Hi-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy-D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Improve bone health and lifetime productivity with Hi-D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet.
Essential Ag Solutions, bringing innovative science-based solutions to livestock producers.
Good day. I'm Phil Hoard, host of today's podcast. Today we have Clinton Monchuk joining us. Thanks for being with us. Clinton grew up on a mixed dairy, beef, and grain farm outside of Langan, Saskatchewan. In 2016, Clinton accepted the role of executive director with Farm and Food Care Saskatchewan to promote farming and ranching to consumers in an effort to build the public's trust in food. He and his family continue to be active owners on their family grain farm in Saskatchewan and cattle ranch in Oklahoma. Clinton, thank you for taking the time to share with us today.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Phil.
So today we're going to be focusing our conversation on Canadian agriculture, specifically some stuff about the Canadian consumer, which for me is a pretty interesting topic, given that I'm a U.S. producer and I don't normally think about that too much. So should be pretty fun. But before we begin, please give us just a short background for our listeners on your relevant experience and your work in this area to help set up the stage for our conversation today.
Sure. So I grew up on a family farm in Saskatchewan, which I still own with my brother right now. And I don't know, it's one of those things where, and I know, Phil, you still farm, so you kind of, I'm not too sure if you could say you're born with it or you're born into it, but you just have this feeling that you want to be a part of agriculture the rest of your life. In fact, the brother that I'm farming with now, we used to play farming in the shop and accidentally leave tractors keys on and get yelled at by my dad. So it was one of those things that it was always in me. But I did my undergraduate at the University of Saskatchewan, my master's in agribusiness at the University of Guelph. And it spurred an interest in me to look into agriculture policy. So I did a brief stint down in Washington, D.C., working for the American version of the National Farmers Union, where I met my wonderful wife, hence the Oklahoma connection to the ranch down in Okemo, Oklahoma. But it then kind of propelled me into doing a little bit of that lobbying policy work in Ottawa. I worked for a supply managed group in Saskatchewan. Now I'm really focused on consumer engagement, I guess you could say, and probably why you have me on the podcast. But yeah, I've been all over the place. I've worked in Mexico, the U.S., kind of all around Canada, but I found my place here in Saskatchewan, and I like it because it's close to my farm. That being said, I'm losing one of my children to the United States next year. He's going to play ball down at a community college in Kansas. So anybody in that Pratt, Kansas area that's listening in, my son will be pitching for the Beavers in the fall of 26.
In animal nutrition, precision matters. Choline chloride is an essential ingredient that supports growth, muscle development, and liver health in poultry, swine, aquatic animals, and pets. Backed by decades of expertise and certified quality, Eastman's liquid choline chloride provides a cost-effective solution and delivers consistent performance across species. Eastman helps you get more from your nutrition program. Learn more at eastman.com.
Well, I figured we could just get started here, just thinking about some questions. You know, what is the top of mind of the consumer when it comes to food right now?
Yeah, and here's where it will differ from the United States. So I do find that our media is a little bit more focused on the United States than vice versa. As a result of that, people maybe a little bit more up in arms up here about certain things happening south of the border and whatever comments made. I'm not going to get into that. But what's interesting about it, it has fundamentally moved the dial on Canadian agriculture. And what I mean by that, from the consumer's perspective, and we do work with the Canadian Center for Food Integrity, they measure consumer trust and a whole variety of different metrics. But one of the metrics is, do you feel the food system here in Canada is going in the right direction? And for the first time since COVID, it's gone substantially up. And by substantially up, I mean, I think it's 58% of consumers now in Canada feel that our food system is moving in the right direction because we're talking about it more, and we're talking about purchasing Canadian products and talking about some of the, you know, processes we go through as Canadian farmers and ranchers up here with our products, which, to be fair, is not dissimilar from your process that you go through. And I can attest to that being part of the ranch down in Oklahoma. However, there is that perception that exists. And as a result of that perception, it's just created this extra pride, I think, in Canadian food and Canadian agriculture, which from our perspective, I think is great. As mentioned, I spent a lot of my time south of the border and absolutely love the pride that exists with American farmers and consumers with American products. So I don't think it's any dissimilar between the two countries. I think it's just maybe a little bit more elevated right now on the north side of the border.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the border. You know, what do you think is happening, you know, down here that is affecting the Canadian consumer up there?
I would say they're just the talk around the political scene. So the talk of, 51st state, that probably rubs people the wrong way up here. Conversations around that have just made Canadian consumers just focus more on Canadian products. To be fair, there's a good chunk, and I go grocery shopping probably half the time for my family. Half the stuff we buy on the produce side, if not more, is American. Like there's no way around it. It's flipping cold here right now in Saskatchewan. Yeah. We can't grow much right here when it comes to fresh produce. So we got to import it from California mainly and I guess Washington all the way down into Mexico. So there's certain things that you just can't substitute. And I think that the flip is true and for some of the products that y'all might get down there. But I think that is one of the things people have just taken a little bit more notice of, trying to support what I would say local, but local in this context is Canadian.
You know, how have things changed with consumer viewpoints when it comes to farmers and ranchers? You know, you mentioned that earlier being what you feel like is a big part of that consumer sentiment, you know, going up for the first time in a while. And so what things have you changed or have been big initiatives that you feel like maybe have helped move that needle?
Yeah, so one, just to kind of get back into some of the demographic shifts, and it's not different on the American side or the Canadian side. We've become more urbanized, right? So, you know, you talking a little bit with me before about your own family farm, that's becoming an oddity. In Canada, only 1.6% of the population actually has a direct tie to a farm or a ranch. That means 98.4% of consumers don't. Right. So that interaction that we used to have with farmers or even rural Canada. 82% of our population now lives in large urban areas. You're removing that just happen chance of interaction between rural and urban consumers. So what we're trying to do with Farm and Food Care Saskatchewan is create some of that engagement. And obviously, the best way to do that is farm tours when there's an actual physical engagement. And we do that with some influencers, some from the United States, some from Canada, talking about what we do on our farms and our ranches. But then we've kind of pivoted a little bit when we realized there's no way you're going to be able to do that with, you know, 40 some million people. So we've decided to go more online. So we started back in 2019 an initiative called Canadian Food Focus that just talks about how we grow food up in Canada and some of the background to the nutritional facts or recipes, things that consumers actually are interested in. So for myself, I'm super interested in soil health. And Phil, I could talk your ear off for a day about what I do with my soil to try and make it better, not only for me, but for my kids or my nieces in the future if they decide to farm. But that's not top of mind for a consumer. Top of mind for a consumer is, you know, I'm interested in strawberries. Okay, so what are the nutritional facts of strawberries? And, you know, I've heard some things about herbicides or pesticides. Maybe I just need to read up about that and what the facts are around it. So we provide that information to kind of increase that food literacy with Canadian consumers. And we have done what I would say a measurable job of doing that. And I would like to say some of the credit for that increase amount of Canadian consumers feeling like the food system is going in the right direction is our initiatives that we're taking nationally. Some just exogenous to what we're doing with just other factors. But being out there and being proactive is definitely better than sitting on our hands and doing nothing. So that I would say is one of the biggest things that we've done here in the last, you know, 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, it was on your website, and I think that there is a very focused of efforts I can tell on kind of explaining the basics about each kind of section of agriculture and, you know, helping educate. But then, you know, not everyone's going to the website, right? So that whole conversation around using social media, I think, is a modern way of communicating that's interesting for sure. And like I said, see some parallels with what the industry, ag industry within the U.S. has done to some degree, whether that's through influencers or even using industry organization accounts in those ways. You know, this being a swine-focused podcast, there, Clinton, is there anything specifically about hog or swine farming within Canada that would be relevant to this?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, so we have what we call the food influencer farm tours every year in July. And we had a little bit of a hang-up. So we do a lot of work with Saskatchewan pork here in the province and with other pork producers throughout the country. One of the things that we actually were trying to figure out, obviously, it's pretty tough to take 15, 20 people, shower in, shower out facilities, right? It's become very intimate with people you don't know very quickly, but also trying to just figure out the logistics of that is pretty difficult. So what we've done is we've actually had individuals from the Prairie Swine Center here in Canada go into the barn with live video. And as they're in the barn, answer questions that these individuals have. And I'll be 100% frank that this is the first time majority of these influencers have ever seen the inside of a hog barn that hasn't been an animal rights video. Mm-hmm. And their eyes are open to the level of care, the level of support, the level of biosecurity that goes into raising hogs. And that's one thing that, you know, I just think of has been second to none in terms of changing people's views around the hog industry from those influencers. Then that influences them to write about it in their own social media. So now we're not farmers or ranchers telling our story. We have independent food bloggers or independent dietitians or chefs that are talking about the industry in their own way. And that's another level of influence that, you know, is getting out to the audience in another manner, which is beneficial for everybody.
We've had an initiative here to do something similar like that. And it's always very interesting, the questions that come up in those, because of your point, right? A lot of them have never seen the inside. They may see pictures of the outside or even have drove by farms before. And, you know, due to the biosecurity requirements and wanting to keep animals healthy and all of that, it is a challenge to do that. But I think with modern technology, it's a way to begin to bridge that gap. We know there's a gap there, but certainly how are we bridging it, and what are we doing within the tools that we have in the toolbox to do what we're talking about here. So
when it comes to raising healthy, strong swine, the environment makes all the difference. Pancopia provides better environmental conditions for swine so that they can grow faster and more efficiently. Grow smarter, grow stronger, and watch your profits soar. Pancopia, the future of swine care starts here. Visit pancopia.com today to learn more.
You know, as you've done your research and you guys work through these different programs, you know, would there be anything that you feel like farmers misunderstand about consumer perception?
Yeah, I think there's that. And this gets back to just the fact that a lot of consumers just don't think about it, right? And they see a full grocery store or a restaurant that has numerous different choices, don't really think necessarily of a lot of that background information of how that food's grown until they see a social media post from a special interest group or some whack job saying something bad about the industry. So you kind of have to just step back a little bit and realize that they're not dealing with it every day, and we are. You know, you live it, your family lives it, my family lives it. I've had some stories with my son getting into arguments with his teacher in class talking about Roundup, because he knows why we use it and how we use it, but the teacher doesn't necessarily know how that happens. And again, her perspective is different. So to have a conversation and explain how we're using it in a responsible way and making sure that we're abiding by the rules and regulations that are out there, when you understand the level of knowledge might be closer to that grade 4 level of understanding from a primary food production, it helps you kind of ease into conversations. And then based on that, I always say based on the initial conversation, you can tell if this person has a bioscience background or maybe is an engineer or something like that, that you can relate things back to them. Once you get into some conversations like that, you can better understand and better figure out avenues to kind of communicate those areas. One thing that I use a lot with youth is conversations about gardens. So when, you know, I always say if your mom or dad is kind of ticked at you because you've done something wrong, do they ever make you go and pull weeds in the garden? Oh, yeah, that sucks. I say, okay, now figure it out. Like, can you imagine pulling weeds on a football field? Oh, that'd be awful, right? That'd be super awful. Now think about doing it on 9,000 football fields. Well, okay, that's not going to happen. Then they understand why we would need a herbicide, right? So then that learning gets in and it kind of clicks. Okay, I understand that now. I understand why you would do that instead of having to rogue the field trying to pick weeds on 9,000 acres. It's just not going to happen, right? So, you know, trying to get into their experience, understand their perspective, things that they understand to relate back to why you do the things you do on your own farm.
Yeah, it's about understanding their, I liked your analogy there of their knowledge level can be equivalent to some, you know, grade school when it comes to this. And a lot of us in the industry, do have that science or very deep understanding of things. And we probably come at things sometimes way too high of a level, and you lose the engagement in the process because we needed to start we needed to, I was talking with a colleague the other day, it was we needed to do the crawling before the walking and the walking before the running and so on and so forth. So yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
And I think it, like you're close to the Columbus area, so you understand traffic. But, you know, out here in the Canadian prairies or the northern prairies of the U.S., like, we don't understand traffic. So to again, think about perspective. We don't know what people go through in downtown Toronto or Chicago or Detroit, right? It's fundamentally a different perspective they have on life. Similarly, you know, our perspective or their perspective on what we do in rural Canada or rural America is it's different. And I think when we understand those perspectives, we can start to have conversations.
So as you've done some of these tours and these different initiatives, you know, are there factors that you feel like are non-negotiables or things that, you know, we need to be aware of that help build or break that trust with consumers as you've worked, you know, your organization works to do that, you know, just that to build it, obviously not break it.
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the things that I find, we do a lot of training with farmers, ranchers, industry people, students on agriculture campus throughout Western Canada. And one of the things that kind of comes to mind is just this mental block that I don't know if I want to talk about what I do, because then we're going to get down some, you know, conversation where I don't want to go. But think about it. If you are talking to a consumer about growing food, there should be nothing that's off the table in terms of what you're doing on your own farm. Now, it might be a conversation of how to word things to make sure that you're conveying it correctly. But at the end of the day, we need to talk about all the different aspects of what we do on our farms and ranches, because if we don't, and you know, a consumer feels duped because you've tried to persuade them down a direction that's maybe not entirely transparent, well, then that decreases the level of trust. It doesn't increase the level of trust. And that is one of the things that, you know, there's certain aspects of, for example, the hog industry that I guarantee I do not know about. And you would be better equipped to answer those questions. By just saying, I don't know the answer to it, actually increases level of trust with people you're talking to, because nobody expects you to know everything. That's impossible. Nobody does. So when you are truthful back to them, it does increase that level of trust. And I think that is another one of those little bit of barriers that you feel you need to know all the answers for, but you definitely do not.
Yeah. And I think today in our world today, that the trust is a lot of times is very much only able to fully happen, or full trust is able to happen with that authenticity. And so what, you know, that's really what you're saying, right? Is that there are things that are difficult to explain. And, you know, specifically within our industry, it is, there are very, very difficult things to understand. You know, farrowing stalls would be one of them, right? Having animals in farrowing stalls. But it's that building that conversation around, you know, and it's a fun story for me to talk about as an example, where my grandfather, you know, great grandfather raised them in the field, and then, you know, then they brought them, started to be inside a little bit, or inside outside. And then think of to where we are today, where modern farms are, you know, it's all about saving pigs. And it's, you know, you tell that story about, what the true, you know, sustainability path is of that is in the, all of the resources that go into saving lives in that way, so that we can have, you know, prosperous food and safe food. And it really is a big topic to talk about, but it is, or many of those topics are very difficult but like you said, I think we don't go there all the way, right? I think at the beginning, you start somewhere and you build that conversation with understanding. And I think authenticity is a big part of it, which I hear you saying is a big, you know, what you feel like is what you're seeing.
Yeah. And then, like, I think people realize that, you know, agriculture is not a Disney movie. Like, I think they've realized that, but they also don't understand the level of science and tech that goes into what we do. And we started doing more of that on Canadian Food Focus here in this last year with me just doing videos of planting and spraying and harvesting crops so people could understand a little bit more of the tech that goes into it. And a lot of people were super surprised that, first of all, we had self-driving machines, which have been around for a long time. But even the precision now that we have within to vary the amount of fertilizer, or the new combine that I got has its own artificial intelligence in it. And people are just dumbfounded by this level of advancement, which I think when they start understanding that, not only is it beneficial for them to understand, but it may create a little bit of opportunity for agriculture-related jobs in the future, too, if it spurs interest with a teenage kid that might be interested in some of this new tech, right? So I think it is just overall beneficial going forward to just talk about it more.
You know, as you think through this, what would be your top piece of advice for farmers when communicating about food and agriculture? As you kind of summarize, your initiatives and the things that you've learned and that you've seen, what would be some of, the top things that come to mind?
I think people need to realize that, the person sitting next to you at a baseball game or a hockey game, football game, whatever it happens to be, or a community event, they probably want to talk to you, and it's just to try and be open and start a conversation up. And if you're a little worried about talking about certain subjects on your own farm, as crazy as it sounds, just try talking to yourself in front of a mirror and just getting it out. And just, I know it sounds dorky, but it works so much easier after you've just verbalized a little bit of what you want to get across. You mentioned you're a family farm. We're a family farm. When we talk about the generational, I'm the fourth generation of our farm. Looking forward to the fifth. A lot of that stuff resonates with just everyday folk because they think, okay, wow. You're not in for a short-term buck to be made. You're not in it and selling out. You're in for a long term if you've been doing this for over 100 years. So, take that first step. I find it lots when, again, I'm watching my son play sports or my daughter dance, and somebody will just kind of say, hey, I heard you farm. I got a question about this. And be open to those conversations. As soon as you're open and transparent about that, you've just now connected with one consumer, right? So it's just beneficial all around to have those conversations and not shy away from them.
Yeah, I think the perception is that we need to change the masses, but really it comes down to, one person at a time. And, all these things we've talked about today is really about just very clearly saying this is how things happen, and being willing to take questions and having authenticity about those responses. And, really there's obviously we're all human, so there's really not too terribly much different there between Canada and the U.S. But I think it would be interesting. I haven't looked at the statistics for the U.S., but it would be, a little bit hard to believe that we feel like this the consumer sentiment is rising on how U.S. is, food is being done. But being a producer and being involved in organizations, you see all of the things that happen behind the scenes, and sometimes it can become discouraging and not seeing the needle move much. But I think that message about one person at a time is all it takes. And I think we can all get behind that because we all have that circle of influence that we have, regardless of who the person is or their background. And
just on that, too, you talked a little bit, and you're right. Sometimes we as farmers are inundated with some of the negative messaging. And I get it lots. I do some lectures at the university here. And the comment is there's, people aren't going to be eating animal proteins in the future. Well, that's completely false. I was looking at the USDA data for the coming up to the end of 2025. Consumption of animal proteins is on the rise, right? You have some drops in beef production. Just, I think supply is one of the biggest issues. Chicken production or consumption per capita is going through the roof. Pork production kind of depends on the year, maybe up a little, down a little, but is consistent with a growing population. So you think of these things, and it's actually not true. Like, people are continuing to consume animal proteins. But if you get in that paradigm of only hearing certain things, your perception kind of gets a little bit jaded, which sometimes it's good to take a sober step back and look at the numbers and say, actually, we're doing pretty good as an agriculture industry.
For sure. I think one thing happening within the U.S., with the MAHA movement, if I'm sure you are familiar with, and just the the clear focus to get back to whole foods and, animal proteins, fortunately, are a huge part of that. And I think it's an interesting time to be a producer to see the government really focusing on something like that and having a conversation around it. We can argue the semantics of that and is everything right or wrong, but I right. think it, all in all, it's usually a good time when you have such an authoritative, when you have the government that is at least having a conversation about that and trying to help people understand that maybe what we thought was healthy or what the perception of healthy is may not necessarily be that way. And, that's exciting for me for the future too, as we just having a conversation about it, I think is just fun, just because it is a big part of from a producer perspective of that's a huge part of our life. Right.
So, right. Yeah.
Very good. Anything else you'd like to share on this topic today, Clinton?
I think we covered the main points, but again, like the ability to be ready for a conversation for anybody who's listening is simply just, maybe it's not in front of the mirror. It's maybe as you're driving out to the barn, you're kind of talking, to your dashboard and just saying, this is why I do what I do. And you find when you have that kind of just little conversation with yourself, it just makes it so much easier when you actually see somebody in the post office or in the grocery store. I've had long conversations. We used to be producers of eggs and had long conversations with people in the egg section of the grocery store, just trying to walk through the different choices they can make. And really, at the end of the day, my comment is, whatever choice you make, it's a farmer producing that. So, it might not be my eggs and I'm fine with that. But as long as you're buying eggs, it gets back to your idea that, supporting something that's wholesome, like an egg or pork or chicken or beef, whatever it is nothing but positive for our entire industry.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Vaxinova, formulate to your needs. Custom-made vaccines. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost pig health and performance. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Uniferon 200 from Pharmacosmos, the iron dextrin for baby pigs, which promotes faster growth. Better production performance starts with Eastman Choline Chloride. Visit eastman.com. Looking to boost the productivity and health of your swine herd? Hi-D is the original pure source of 25-hydroxy-D3, proven in over 100 research trials and fed to millions of pigs each year in North America. Hi-D improves bone strength, immune health, and enhances overall performance. Whether you want to improve sow longevity, get heavier nursery pigs, or help your grow-finish pigs thrive, trust the original, proven 25-hydroxy-D3 Hi-D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d.
We have some questions we like to ask all of our guests, and realizing that you're not, self-stated, you're not the swine expert, but if you were to have a favorite resource for, swine-related materials, what would that be?
So I do actually go to Sask Pork. So it's the provincial pork organization here and has just a variety of different, you know, biosecurity things that hog farmers do here, or recipes for pork. So it's kind of my go-to for different things related to the pork industry. And there's actually a cute little little guy that does a podcast on there too that I listen to. So I think I saw him here at a farm show a little while ago. He's probably about 13, 14 years old now, but it's pretty cute to see him ask the questions and talk more about the pork industry. So I enjoy that.
That's awesome. Yeah, engaging in state organizations or, you know, province organizations in your way is really, really important. We find a lot of value in that as well. What is your favorite book or resource outside of the industry?
So I don't read a lot of books. I'm usually busy doing something, but I listen to some audio books. So the latest one, I've been doing more biographies lately, and I actually listened to a really great one by Kelsey Grammer called Karen. If you have an opportunity to read it or listen to it, it's good to see another side of an individual that you grew up with. So I was one of those kids that grew up watching Cheers and then Frasier on, you know, evening shows, which I probably shouldn't have been watching Cheers because it was probably age inappropriate for a kid. But but then to understand some of the background, and Karen is about his sister. And I won't tell much of the story, so you don't ruin it for anybody. But it's a very emotional story, and it gives you a little bit more of a background to Kelsey Grammer's life, and really something that, I don't know, it getting back to the comment, we're all human, just highlights a little of that. So good read for me anyway, or good listen, I should say. I listened to it while I was in the combine. So
there you go. Yeah, I do a lot more listening than reading as well. Yeah, I feel like I do more that way. You know, final question for you today. You know, in your opinion, what sets professionals apart, successful professionals apart from those that are not?
You know, and I was, to be fair to the listeners, I did get these questions ahead of time. So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking to myself, and as crazy as it sounds, emotional intelligence. And the reason I say that is individuals that I've looked up to and thought, you know, these are great leaders for whatever industry or whatever scenario they are, they are great communicators, they have empathy, and they know how to motivate people. And to me, that means they have good emotional intelligence to figure that out. Because when you have a conversation with them, you feel like you were listened to, right? And I think that is one of the things that sometimes with all the social media and all the just media in general that we're inundated with, it's sometimes nice to just feel like you've been listened to. And that, I think, is an aspect of emotional intelligence. So I would say that. I maybe threw you for a loop on that one, but...
No, that is, I'm a firm believer in that too. You and I don't know each other very well, but I think that's the IQ versus EQ, and the whole idea of, you know, smart is not always, you know, is what not always what people need, right? They need to hear that, you know, almost going back to that authenticity comment that we were talking about earlier, is having the ability or the flexing into that of being able to connect with people in that way, and that is, I can see that too. That's a good one. Well, thank you for sharing today. It was great to have you on, Quentin, and appreciate you sharing your perspective and the good things you have going on up there in Canada.
You bet. I really enjoyed it, Phil, and yeah, feel free anytime in the future.
Sounds good. Take care.
Awesome. Thanks.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.